This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Avani Dias here. This is the Hack Podcast. And in a second, we might have the key to bringing back live music in the pandemic. We're going to talk about what that new announcement is in just a second. And there are grand finals all around us at the moment. Melbourne Cup is soon. And one thing all these events have in common, heaps of sports betting ads. Later on this episode, how sports gambling online is massively going up this year because of pandemic boredom. And we're going to look at the bright side of working from home.
Hack. Home testing will be available from the 1st of November.
On Triple J.
Yeah, you know when you get a COVID test, you've got to go to the clinic, then wait a day or two for your results to come back. Well, the federal government has just announced rapid tests will be available for you to do at home from November. They're not as accurate as the PCR ones we've got now, but they could provide an extra level of protection. And most importantly, yeah, help bring back things like gigs and massive events, as Tamsin Rose reports.
One of the critical parts of the national plan is to make sure that people will be able to go about their daily activities safely.
That's Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt speaking this morning.
So I'm delighted that the TGA has now recommended that home testing will be available from the 1st of November.
You heard him. Soon you'll be able to administer your own rapid antigen tests from the comfort of your own home with a result in 15 minutes. But these ones aren't quite as accurate as the ones done by pathology labs. And if your rapid test comes back positive, you'll still need to go and get one of those PCR tests. But these ones are cheaper and faster, and they'll offer us a little bit more protection.
We have to have individual applications approved, so specific tests have to be shown to be safe and effective. The second thing is obviously to ensure that each of the states and territories is in a position to accept that.
So even though the Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, has given these super quick tests the okay for use at home without supervision, each of the state and territory governments will also need to approve them. TGA boss Professor John Skerritt has been speaking to a parliamentary committee today.
We're working very actively with a range of companies because the current tests are designed for professional use.
So these tests are already in use in some workplaces, like aged care homes and some quarantine facilities. But this step will see them used more and changed slightly, so you can use them whenever you like.
Still sticking something down your throat makes you dry retch, but yeah, I haven't vomited on my test result yet.
So. Courtney Bembridge is a young journo for the BBC World News in London. And she reckons she's done hundreds of these rapid tests herself.
We've been using them since last year and they've just become a regular feature of our lives.
Where she is, it's super normal to ask your mates to get a negative result before catching up, especially if someone in the group is vulnerable to COVID.
So you get a kit and it comes straight to your door. You unpack it.
In the UK, the tests are free and you can pick them up at the chemist or have them sent to your house.
And then you've got the swab that goes up your nose and at the back of your throat. You've got to make sure which, you know, order you do it in. Otherwise, you might put snot in your mouth. So it's throat first, then you do your nose, and then put that into a fluid.
Then you mix it all around and put a drop onto the test.
And it'll tell you if you've done it incorrectly. So it'll say that the test is inconclusive or it hasn't been done correctly, or it'll tell you if you're positive or negative. And the results are available instantly.
Courtney's been travelling around Europe over the summer, going to gigs and festivals and live events. Pretty much everywhere requires proof of double jab or a very recent negative test result.
Rapid antigen testing is going to be absolutely key to the music industry returning to what it does well, which is bringing music to people in a live setting.
That's Melbourne doctor and musician Sophie Payton, who you might know as Gordy. She's stoked about what this could mean for the return of live events.
If we're looking at broad brushstrokes here as to how to get the live music industry back, then using things that are quick and cheaper to produce and easy for people to use in their homes, we're going to get a safer outcome overall.
Sophie wants to see the use of antigen testing industry-wide to protect artists and fans.
If I'm on a tour with a band or crew and someone in my band or crew gets COVID from an audience member that hasn't been vaccinated or that hasn't returned a recent negative test, that completely derails your tour.
She hopes this could be the turning point on the road back to gigs.
We're yet to get a really comprehensive roadmap for the music industry and how we're going to return to live music in order to have confidence. We definitely need that, but I'm going to hold on to my cautious optimism in the meantime.
Hack on Triple J.
Thames and Rose there. I'd love to know if you've ever dealt with rapid testing. A few businesses have rolled them out in Australia, just a select few. Or tell me how these rapid tests could help your industry or your life more generally. Call me 1300 055 36. Professor Nigel McMillan is here to answer all our questions on this. He's from the Menzies Health Institute. Thanks for coming on Triple J. We've just heard about how this could help gigs and live music. What else could it help in terms of bringing us back to normal life in some way?
Yeah, well, I think the gigs are certainly an important one, but work sites, as you've mentioned, family gatherings, travel is probably another one. But I think there's probably another couple of uses. So we may use it on a regular basis. So, for example, some workplaces, you know, weekly testing might occur, particularly for people who can't be vaccinated, or maybe for people who choose not to be vaccinated. You can have these weekly tests and bring that into work, or they might even do it at work to show that you're negative. And then, of course, you know, if you're going to visit an old age, you know, an aged care setting, for example, where there's a high risk of passing it on, you might want to do it that way. And basically, if you're suspected or you might think you might have been exposed, you might be in quarantine, you might get released earlier if you can just do rapid testing at home. So lots of good uses for this.
For sure. Ian in the Netherlands has called, which is cool that someone's listening from the Netherlands. But he says, Australia seems so far behind on rapid testing. Here we've been using the rapid home test for months. They're standard and commonplace. And that's the same in places like the UK and so on. Why has it taken Australia so long to roll this out?
This is true. We actually proposed some research with some of these tests last year, and we got told in no uncertain terms we weren't allowed to do it. But UK have had it for a long time. All the school kids have had it. You know, and for schools, this is great because this is a really an acceptable alternative to, say, isolating kids at home. They can stay in the classes longer. Singapore, you know, all the households have them. They can get them for free. In the US, they can be sold. And in fact, one of the biggest antigen testing companies is in Brisbane, Illume, and they sold about $300 million worth of product to the US.
Why were you told that we weren't allowed to have them a few months ago?
Because these need to be done by a certified pathology lab. And so at this time, and as the health minister was indicating today, they have to be done by, you know, a pathology lab or a medical practitioner. So the change in the rules now to allow home use from November the 1st is really the change that happened.
Daniel's called in. How would this help your work, Daniel?
So rapid testing would help quite well for my own benefit and as my family, because I work in multiple suburbs a day, and having that insurity of getting rapid testing is beneficial for me and, yeah, my family.
And how would you be getting them? Would you try to do them every couple of days? Because you work in construction work. So what's your sort of strategy going forward?
So my strategy at the moment is every second week, after work, driving down to a drive-through testing facility and getting tested, and then getting results Saturday or Sunday. But if moving forwards, if I got a test every Friday and then got the results an hour later, I know I'll be right for the weekend and know I'll be right for Monday as well.
Yeah, for sure. And are you vaccinated, Daniel?
First dose, waiting for my second dose.
Cool. Daniel, that sounds really good. Obviously, that great extra layer of protection for you. Thanks so much for calling in. Professor Nigel McMillan, this is a really important question. How do we assure the people who do the tests do it honestly? What's to stop them from falsifying the results? And that's a good point. Like with the PCR tests, which we're doing now, you know, if you test positive, that gets reported to authorities and there's a bit of accountability for those positive cases. But that probably wouldn't be the same if people are just doing it at home, right?
Yeah, no, this is one of the issues with this. I mean, we have 33 tests currently produced and approved, but of course it's self-reported. So, you know, we've got to rely on people to do that, and the consequences for some people of testing positive in terms of losing work, et cetera, may be quite problematic. So there's certainly an issue, and that's not an easy one to address. I mean, of course, the other one is we want people to use them, but, you know, particularly those who haven't been vaccinated, but there are, of course, a population, a hardcore 5% of anti-vaxxers who definitely won't be using these tests either, I suppose.
Is there a concern that people who are hesitant might just say, oh, well, these tests are coming in, I may as well just not bother?
Hopefully not. You know, vaccination is really obviously something that not only protects you, but protects the community, protects your elderly relatives and young relatives and kids and things. So, you know, for example, the best thing we can do for those under 11 and 12 right now is to be vaccinated around them, because they can't get the vaccine right now. So hopefully not.
A big part of this is obviously the federal government's announced it, but the states all need to endorse this and back this situation. But not every state will maybe take this up, right? It's only for places where there are a lot of cases and elimination has been ditched as a strategy. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so this is going to be most useful for New South Wales and Victoria, where you've got lots of cases circulating. Not really very useful for the rest of the states right now. But look, those states, and I don't anticipate any opposition to this change in legislation, but those states are going to have to go through this sort of messy phase when borders open up and cases come in, and they'll be in the same situation eventually anyway. So they'll need this at some stage, and maybe not immediately. So look, this shouldn't be a problem in terms of changing the rules right now.
All right. And just lastly, I mean, obviously you've said there's the company in Brisbane which is creating these rapid tests, but do we have the capacity in Australia to, I guess, supply these rapid antigen tests to the country and to actually make them free for people to access?
Yeah, good question. There are, as I say, 33 different tests approved right now, so there's plenty of supplies, and I have no doubt they are producing vast amounts. So other than any sort of normal shipping delays, I don't anticipate an issue. The particular test made here in Brisbane is connected to your phone, and they haven't sold this in Australia, and we'd certainly like to see a local company get the business, wouldn't we?
All right, Professor Nigel McMillan, thanks for explaining that, as always. A lot of text coming in. G from Canberra says rapid tests would be indispensable for RFS and SES for the upcoming fire season. That's an interesting point. Amber on the Gold Coast says, my partner and I work 2 jobs, 7 days testing at home. Yes, please. And Eve, my work wants us to come in 20 minutes early to get tested, but it's a bit annoying if you need to come in for a shift at 5 a.m. and you have to come in 20 minutes earlier.
Hack is the advertising and the normalisation of gambling, where children now think gambling is a part of watching sport.
I'm Triple J.
You are listening to Hack. I'm Avani Dias, and the AFL Grand Final just happened. The NRL one is this weekend. Melbourne Cup is soon. I'm not going to give you any unsolicited opinions on any of those events, don't worry. But one thing you would notice while watching any sport is the intense betting ads. They're on all the time. And pandemic boredom has led to big rates of young people betting online on sports, more than we have ever seen, according to a survey out today. And the amount of money Australians spend on sports gambling has been growing for the last 5 years as well. I want to know your thoughts. Have you been getting into sports gambling online? 1-300-055-536. Call in. Joe Lauder has been looking into this.
We had nothing else to do, so it'll be like, I can't just scroll the same social media apps all the time. Like, let's open up a betting app and see what's on offer.
Tom is in his 20s and he lives in Melbourne, which means two things. He spent a lot of time in lockdown and a lot of time watching the AFL. Last year, Tom was missing out on going to the footy with his mates or watching it together at the pub, and he found himself betting on it a lot as a substitute. It was also a way that Tom and his friends stayed connected.
A couple of us would share, like, good markets that were coming up for the upcoming week and so on. But then I also subscribed to other pages which would send out like tips for the week on what they suggest betting on. And I didn't really talk about those ones because I didn't want to, you know, let on that I was betting more than I was to my friends.
Then there was the 2020 bonanza.
And I think at one point it picked up quite a bit when we had, I think it was like 20 days in a row of footy matches. You know, it was good because it gave us something to do during lockdown, but it was bad from the gambling point of view because I was like, whoop, another match is on, might as well put another bet on the matches on tonight and the matches on tomorrow night and the matches on the day after that and so on.
Tom would roll all his winnings back into the app and he lost track of how much he was actually putting in. He was also keeping it a secret from people. He'd set up a separate bank account for punting and he started losing more and then trying to chase those losses. These are all textbook signs that his gambling was becoming a problem.
Yeah, I probably realised towards the end of the footy season last year that, you know, I was focusing more and more on betting and losing like bigger and bigger amounts. And I realised, look, this probably isn't a healthy relationship with the game that I'm into. So that's probably when it clicked for me.
This is a trend with young guys. It's been going on for longer than the pandemic, but that really kicked it into another gear.
Definitely for young men, we're seeing this big shift towards gambling on horses and sports on what's called wagering products. And most of that these days is happening on apps.
That's Dr. Christopher Hunt. He's a clinical psychologist at the Gambling Aware Centre at the University of Sydney. Gambling researchers like Dr. Hunt have been noticing a lot of interesting changes since the start of the pandemic. For people who have problems with gambling in person, say on the pokies, at the casino, or at the racetrack, they mostly stopped gambling during lockdowns. But there are a lot of people who never had a problem before who do now.
What we are seeing, though, is that people who perhaps weren't gambling before have started to gamble more, particularly on sports and horses online at an increasing level. So it's more that we're seeing new people are sort of falling into it with the stresses of the pandemic, as opposed to the people who previously had a problem gambling more.
This isn't to say that everyone who puts a bet on has a gambling problem, and there's never one clear line when it goes from being something you do with your mates to a deeper issue. Dr. Hunt says there are a couple of warning signs, though.
The first is when you start to lie to the people around you about your gambling. And the second is that when you sort of set a limit for how much you want to gamble, but you find yourself constantly going over it.
There's another issue that makes this all a whole lot more complicated, and I reckon you've noticed it too.
It's the little things.
It's the gamblification of sport.
But they can change the game in a heartbeat. As the official wagering partner of the AFL.
There it is! The curse! Come on, cash out!
Professor Lisa Farrell is a societal economist at RMIT, and she's spent a lot of time researching gambling. She says betting has become so embedded in our sports coverage that it's not surprising that young people are developing problems.
It's also the fact that they're quite gambling literate. Sports and gambling has been tied together a lot in the media, and so they've learnt the language. They understand a difference between a trifecta and a multi-bet and other things. So that allows them access into these platforms and to this gambling.
Professor Farrell reckons that gambling advertising is a problem that we're going to have to address as a whole society sometime soon.
This is not illegal activity. They're allowed to advertise and they advertise within the rules. So the question is, have we got the legislation right?
For Tom, he missed out again this year on going to the footy and watching it with mates, and he still loves to nerd out on all the stats and the details of football. So instead of filling that void with gambling, he got into fantasy football.
Yeah, I think what really helped for me was trying to find like a group of friends who were still into the sports that I was into, but in a more like productive way. Like for me, that came to like finding the group of friends to start a fantasy football league with, because they still cared about the sport and wanted to watch it and talk about it with them.
Hack Triple J. Joe Lauder with that story. A few people getting in touch. Could not agree more, says someone. Stop normalising toxic betting behaviour. I see the ads for racing targeting families as an acceptable family pastime. Caitlin in Toowoomba's texted, the only time I gamble is on the Hottest 100. Interesting. Yeah, well, we're not going to play sports betting ads. So, you know, whatever. Tom from Sydney says, love gambling but never bet more than I want. I'd love to hear from you. Call me 1300 055 536. Are you into sports betting online? Would love to know your experience as well. Let's talk to a psych on this. Elizabeth Shaw is from Relationships Australia. Thanks for coming on the show. We just heard there a few of the signs of problem gambling in terms of sports betting. What are some of the other ones where it's kind of crossed a line into a dangerous territory?
Well, look, I think one of the key signs is when you find yourself really preoccupied by something. So it's not just, you know, a passing idea that I'm bored today, but it's actually a preoccupation where you're actually constantly vigilant and sort of scanning for the next opportunity, or sort of anxiously kind of wedded to your phone to find out results. Certainly when you know that you're betting more than you've got in your bank account, you know, your head is saying that while your behaviour just keeps going. And, you know, the main threshold for any addiction is really impairment, which is about the degree to which this holds up other aspects of your life. Now, that's a hard one at the moment because our lives are entirely, you know, held up in lots of ways. But I think to the degree where you feel like you've put off almost any other useful activity that you could have done, you might be distracted from work. You may have given up on exercise because you're actually just completely caught up on this instead.
In terms of our psychology around this, you know, when, like, I watched the AFL Grand Final on the weekend and it was just so many sports betting ads. How does that kind of thing influence you as a consumer of these sports?
Well, I think the, you know, obviously these ads and the apps are cleverly designed around the psychology of how to speak to people who are tempted, who are constantly tempted. So they speak to, you know, being a responsible gambler, but at the same time, they flirt with you all the time. And so there is something about the constant tie between your pleasure in watching the game and the possibility that you could make it into something else. You know, what if I could enjoy the game and win money on it? So those constant ties. And of course, gambling, the whole idea of the quick win is seductive. And when people don't have much money, it's very tempting to think, well, I could make money this way. And of course, people only ever make money in the short term and sometimes briefly, never as a long-term option.
Elizabeth, just quickly, I mean, how do you treat an addiction if you're feeling it at the moment in lockdown and pretty isolated but getting really into the online sports bets?
Look, the first thing is to actually recognise that this is not doing you any good and to speak to trusted people. And it is about inventing a structure and a system for your life where you can turn away from it. And often that does require the assistance of friends and others and professionals to keep you sticking to some different goals.
Bronson has called in. Bronson, you're from Queensland. What was your sports gambling like?
G'day, how's it going? Hey, I started sports bet gambling back in about 2017. Just started with sports. You know, I was quite interested in NRL and overseas, and just did online gambling with sports bet. And that quickly turned into horse racing, dog racing, and it went downhill real quick. Became an addiction, you know, never set the gambling limit, and quickly was living paycheck to paycheck as I would lose my money on sports bet to dog racing and horse racing.
Bronson, you just got over it though, right? How did you do that?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I woke up one day and realised I was broke all the time, you know, couldn't socialise with my mates, and I just went cold turkey, and it was successful.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Did you get support for it as well?
No, not at all.
Elizabeth, what do you think of that? Is it better to just go cold turkey? Is that even possible? Obviously it is with Bronson, but not everyone, I assume.
No, I wouldn't recommend it. It's quite difficult to just go cold turkey, but it is possible. And I don't know necessarily how supportive any gambling helpline would be, but it could work for some people.
What do you think about that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, look, I think it's true that there's many pathways. Anyone who thinks that there's a one size fits all is, you know, doesn't realise around addiction. So I think that's really an impressive story. And there are some people who are able to do that, who have a strength of will and also have probably strengths and resources in their life to fall back on, like a platform of being different to that, where you can sort of tell yourself to get a grip and you want to go back to how things were better. Sometimes these things have happened on top of a pile of other sort of insecurities or struggles, and that can be much harder. I think having a support team around you is always good for your weaker moments where you can have people remind you. But if it is negative friends or parents who are going to tell you off, that's probably not going to help. And that's where the gambling helplines, because they're neutral and they're non-judgmental, but they're there to back you, could be a better hearing than turning to people around you who just want to tell you off.
All right, Bronson, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your story with us, and congrats on getting over it as well. It's pretty incredible. And Elizabeth Shaw, thanks so much for all your advice as always.
It's a pleasure.
So many people getting in touch on this. Someone says, I lost $10,000 of personal loans to my problem gambling and I'm only 21. Lenny from the Hunter Valley says, advice from a longtime seasoned gambler, stop now before it ruins your life.
It's The Bright Side.
I'm at home. Why do I have to dress up for people who don't even see me?
On Triple Jack.
Okay, all this week, Triple J is looking at things on the bright side, just a sprinkling of joy for your day. And 2 out of 5 Australians have been working from home during COVID. It can be a pain working at your dining table with a sore back. But Shalila Medora did a shout out on the Hack Instagram and asked you how you found working from home. And it turns out there are a few silver linings. Call me. What have you found are the positives of working from home? 1300 055 36.
Hey, I'm Hannah from Newcastle. I've been working from home for around 18 months now.
Like a lot of people, when Hannah first started working from home, she tried hard to hang on to her old habits.
I originally started my days by waking up early to get ahead of the day.
That wore off pretty quickly.
Soon after, I started waking up later, taking meetings from bed, and not really dressing the part for work.
And that's a huge one. Most of you who responded to our shout out said you ditched the idea of workwear altogether.
It kind of started as a novelty, working from home, not having to wear a bra to meetings and wearing trackies and tights to work every day.
in summer or in the hotter months to help my mental health. I was going to start sunbaking and getting outside, getting a bit of sun.
Some of you, like Belle from Brisbane, really push the envelope with what you rock up to meetings in.
I just found when I'd finished my lunch break, I didn't put my other clothes back on and I just stayed in my bikinis.
Belle embraced it, and her teammates kind of had to as well.
I get calls from people that I've worked with for 5 years, so I just stay in my bikinis or even a sports bra if it was hot and I didn't feel like having a shirt on.
And before you ask, yeah, we're talking about video calls here.
They only see from the chest up. No one seemed to mind. They thought it was kind of funny at first.
And yeah, while schlepping in a onesie or a bikini is fun for a while, working from home has had way more serious consequences for some people.
Hi, I'm Shani. I'm from Newcastle in New South Wales.
Shani was one of the people who responded to our shout out.
I'm a teacher working with high school students who come to our school because they've been disengaged from their education.
In her line of work, remote learning is especially tough.
Most don't have computers and their homes are often not the best places to concentrate on schoolwork.
That's had a ripple effect on Shani's own mental health.
For me, it's been almost impossible to create routine.
I'd say working from home, I probably work longer hours and the lines are definitely blurred between work and home life.
Heaps of you told us that you were putting in way more hours at work too, like Nikki from Sydney.
Now I just take a break from my desk, get dinner and then probably go back to work.
And despite that, Nikki says working from home has actually been awesome for her.
It's definitely not all sunshine and rainbows, but it's provided me flexibility that I needed to juggle work and family.
It's meant she's been able to prioritise her health and fitness, which she wasn't able to do before.
The most recent lockdown has had a silver lining. I've been able to rekindle my love of ocean swimming, and I swim a few kilometres a week with friends in the morning.
When we're talking about silver linings, this is the biggest one. So many of you told us that working from home meant you're able to put exercise into your day a little bit more, like Matt from Sydney.
Working from home has saved me an extra 2 hours each day by not having to go into the office. This extra time has meant I can hit the pavement in the morning before I need to log on at 9 a.m.
Matt did the City to Surf run last year, and since he doesn't have to wake up super early to train, he's doing it heaps more.
I'm now training for an ultra marathon, and with this recent lockdown, I've been more inclined to keep going.
He said it's been great for his physical and mental health.
Using this extra time to get out and exercise with a walk or a run can really help improve general well-being, and a lot of us really need that right now.
Working from home has also had a huge impact on people living with disability or chronic illness and pain, a point Erin from Wollongong is really passionate about.
2020 was the toughest year of my life. My health imploded in January. I had 5 trips to emergency, 2 hospital admissions, and then I was discharged just a couple of weeks before lockdown started.
Erin was diagnosed with a range of conditions, and they still affect her today.
I have pretty debilitating pain, so the shift in the culture surrounding working from home has pretty much saved my career.
Erin's work was great with giving her the flexibility she needed to get back on her feet.
I started it 2 days a week and then I worked back to full time over a few months. Since then, it's pretty regular for me to take calls from bed or lying on the floor or in the car on the way to doctor's appointments.
And not having to go into an office has been a huge bonus too.
I am so fortunate now to be able to avoid hours of commuting in painful train seats with loud noises and fluorescent lighting that can kick off a migraine or a flare-up.
Erin says she hopes employers consider working from home arrangements for people living with disability or illness even after lockdown's ease.
We've had the chance to prove that we're valuable and effective team members, regardless of whether or not we're there with you in person.
Hack on Triple J.
That story was by Shalala Medora. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I'll catch you on the next one.